Let's go. You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
Welcome to Project Action on Podcast One. I'm your host, Jim Beaver, and we've got a little bit of a throwback today. Yes, the best of, because I am all over the place. Delaware, Maryland, Wisconsin, Pastrana Land, you name it, I am there. And that means you're getting a little best of. And this is with a good friend of mine, one of, the most... I don't want to say influential, but one of the most well-known females in the gaming industry, Miss Sydney Goodman. At this point in time, she was the face of IGN.com. She's recently moved on to bigger and better things, but she's got a big social media following, amazing personality, and this was an absolute great interview with Sydney Goodman going back about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So if you missed it the first time around, you're going to enjoy it this time around. Sydney Goodman does not disappoint. I mean, she's... Man, she's worked for Red Bull. She did some stuff with WWE and BuzzFeed. I mean, just a great personality. So I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. Before we jump into that, though, I want to tell you about a couple of our amazing partners here on Project Action. Do you own or rent your home? Well, I'm sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. But you know what's not? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Got to go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. And car waxes have come a really long way. And over the last few years, Meguiar's has launched the next generation of protective products with their hybrid ceramic platform that's specifically geared towards the do-it-yourselfers. All started 2 years back with Meguiar's introducing their hybrid ceramic spray wax. Came in a bright blue bottle with its advanced SiO2 hybrid technology, delivering ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional waxes. It's incredibly easy to use. Simply wash your car, spray on Meguiar's hybrid ceramic spray wax, then just rinse it right off. No rubbing, no curing, no buffing or mess. Provides extreme water-beating action, and the product has literally been flying off the shelves. Then last year, knowing some prefer a more traditional style application, Meguiar's launched a liquid version, the Meguiar's Hybrid Ceramic Liquid Wax. Long-lasting ceramic protection and an easy-to-use wax seals the paint for a long-lasting protection against the elements, delivers extreme water-beating action, easy to use, and applies like a traditional wax with no wax residue. Meguiar's also launched their hybrid ceramic spray detailer for in-between boosted maintenance. Removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, and those evil bird droppings, boosts gloss, and enhances protection. Also contains SiO2 hybrid ceramic protection. Achieves a just-wash look by gently removing fresh contaminants between regular washes before they have a chance to bond. And this year, they've expanded their line to include Meguiar's new hybrid ceramic wash and wax. Bright orange bottle, and it has a unique two-liquid system together in one bucket that delivers results like unlike anything you've ever experienced before. It's blended with slick, low-sudsing surfactants that gently lift and wash away dirt and grime. Its SiO2 Boost is a wax additive that delivers instant water-beating protection. Working in tandem, you get a slick and clean vehicle that beads water like crazy. Optimize your results and washing experience with Meguiar's new hybrid wash mitt that's dual-sided for gentle washing and adding the booster wax. The hybrid wash mitt is sold separately. Now Meguiar's has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone. For incredible water beating action and protection and durability beyond traditional waxes, it's ceramic made easy. It's Meguiar's. And with that, we're going to roll into this interview and a best of with Sydney Goodman. I'd like to welcome my guest to Project Action on Podcast One this week, Sydney Goodman with IGN. How is everything going, Sydney?
Going really good. I mean, we were just talking about, you know, wrapping up the year, and I'm excited to see what 2019 has in store for me, because 2018 was a pretty incredible year, so I'm excited.
Isn't that funny how we start out a year, and, you know, you weren't even at your current employer to start the year. Like, you look back at the end of the year, and you go, man, what just happened? Because I sure wasn't prepared for that. Everybody's like, oh, you got to have a plan going into the new year, and I know, like, with me, any plan I set going into the new year, like a month or two in, it's just like rip it up and throw it up in the air because it's just done.
Yeah, I feel like the older that I've gotten, the more I used to, I mean, I still am very much a planner, but I've gotten a lot more open to the idea of just following like what's interesting to me. And I'm trusting my work ethic at this point that I will make something work if it's interesting. And I don't know, that's worked out for me. So I guess a mix of both is my approach.
Yeah, a mix of both. So that being said, I mean, we're going to talk about IGN today. We've got a ton to talk about. But I don't know. I guess like I want to kind of go back to the beginning because I've got a bunch of questions. I know I got pinged with a few on Twitter already. We'll ask those at the end. But I kind of like, especially with somebody like you, like because you've worked with some amazing companies. I'm looking like Red Bull, BuzzFeed, IGN. Like I'm going down the list and I'm like, man, like you have been with some amazing companies. But I mean, kind of what was your gateway into the whole gaming industry? Because I guess that's where you're at now. And I mean, what was your draw into the industry? I mean, you know, at a young age, I'm sure you had to pick up a controller or something along the lines. I mean, let's start with, you know, kind of the path that got us to where we're at now.
Yeah. So going all the way back to even like before I was born, my dad is a huge gamer. And my mom's told me that he looked at her and was like, hey, when we have kids, as soon as their thumbs are like, usable, yeah, I'm going to teach them how to play games. And I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother. And it was just something that I would always watch my dad play games. I'd watch him play like PC games. But my smaller entry point was I got a Nintendo 64 for Christmas when I was in kindergarten. And I just remember being very confused what it was, but my dad was so excited. It was like my brother and I's gift. And I remember just kind of being like, oh, okay, I don't know what this is. It's not like a Hot Wheel or like a doll. It's this thing. And then it became something that was like my go-to toy, I guess you could call that. But my like love, like deep passionate love really came when my dad would like tuck me in and he'd play Halo Combat Evolved. And I actually remember specifically asking him to wear headsets because the like voices that like, was freaking me out so much. And then I got over my fear and eventually he like kind of let me watch and then he taught me to play. And so Halo was for sure my first like love, where it was something that I couldn't stop thinking about. It was all I wanted to do. It kind of fit in with how I was raised in terms of like, I was a very busy kid. Like I did gymnastics. I played like three sports. I did art class. And so I didn't really have a whole lot of like time to just play with friends necessarily. So it was easy to like get a quick, I don't know, 20 minutes in to keep playing either the campaign or play multiplayer. So that was my gateway.
You know, it's funny you say that because like I'm drawing parallels here and I've got a 10-year-old daughter and it was funny because you're talking about your dad and it was like, I think it was like my excuse too. Like there comes a point when you've got a daughter and she's coming up. It's like, oh, well, you know, on me, it was the excuse. Like I can buy two or three games here and it's not necessarily for me. It's for Addie. Right. That was my excuse. But like, I think I was kind of her gateway and she's 10 now and she's just, you know, she's complete gamer. But it's funny, you know, that you draw those parallels with like your dad, because I think we've come to an era like, you know, 20, 30 years ago where like dads and kids playing video games, it was unheard of. You know what I mean? Like even dads even playing with kids. But now we're to the point where it's like the dads, like, I don't want to say we never grow up, but we share things, you know what I mean? I think we stay, you know, I think it's just the way, I don't know, I guess culture has evolved, but I think that's funny because I draw parallels with that. And I'm like, gosh, I don't even want to know what the first game she watched me play was because I have no idea at this point.
Yeah, I don't know what the order is because I've always been a big fan of the Pokemon RPGs. And I know I played those. But I guess it was, I don't want to say, I feel like Halo was what hooked me into like, oh, like, I love this.
Yeah.
And it kind of went on to, like, jump a little forward. You know, I played Call of Duty. I'm definitely, like, a first-person shooter, okay, multiplayer. Like, that is my arena. And in college, I was majoring in biology. And I have never been the type of person, even when I was a kid, and, you know, they'd ask you, oh, draw what you want to be when you grow up. And I never really had an answer for it, which I just, maybe this was just something I was perceiving, but it felt like everybody wanted to be like a firefighter or be like, they had these huge dreams and they knew what they wanted. And I for sure didn't. And every time somebody asked, I'd lie and it was terrible and so stressful. And so I was majoring in biology. I was at USC and I started streaming just because with bio, I was majoring in biology and then I was pre-med, changed it to pre-dental. And I was super involved in terms of like trying to pad my resume to get into dental school. And I did cheer at the time for USC. I was spirit leader. So again, my social life wasn't super fantastic. So what I started doing was in my free time, I'd stream. And I would say that like definitely unknowingly was my gateway into the games industry because it was just something I started doing it in September 2014, with Destiny. So I was like, quote, a Destiny streamer. That's all I played.
Yeah.
And it kind of sustained me through school because to be honest, like my major was extremely difficult and I wasn't like the happiest. And I guess the reason why is because I didn't actually want to do that. So I made it all the way through taking the DAT, which is kind of the equivalent to like the SAT or like the MCAT. You take it and it's the grade that you present to the dental schools in order to receive admission or not. And I remember taking the test. I studied 8 hours a day for 3 months, 7 days a week. Like it was intense. And I'm waiting for the results because the test is on a computer and you literally press like done. And then it prints out a page with your score on it.
Oh.
So you can imagine how nerve wracking.
Yeah.
That is.
That's like the most terrifying moments of your life right there after you push the button, right?
Yeah. So I pushed the button and I was thinking, I was like, okay, if I don't get above a certain grade, I'm going to scrap this. I'm not going to apply to dental school. And I got like way above it. Like I, not to be like, I did so great, but I did so great. And I just started crying and was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I kind of was like desperately searching for a reason to give my parents and give people who knew this is what I wanted to do. Like, oh, well, I'm not doing it because like, you know, I didn't get a good enough grade. So I'm just going to figure it out. And so that kind of was like a big flag for me of, well, if I don't want to do this, what do I want to do? And so I put a lot of thought into like, what do I care about? Like, what am I passionate about? And part of the reason why I started streaming was I went to MLG Anaheim and watched Optic Gaming compete in Call of Duty. And that was back when Matt Hag, Nate Schott, was on the team. He was still competing. And I remember watching him. And the person I went to the tournament with turned to me and was like, oh, you should look him up on YouTube. You'd really like his content. And I did some research and I checked it out. And I just loved how positive he was. And he seemed to create this like really positive and like almost hopeful community, which I thought was so interesting in the internet, right? Because like I don't think those are the words that come to mind when I think of the internet.
No, especially now it's like I avoid the internet now, not that you can, but it's like
right,
it's so depressing sometimes.
Yeah, but so that was what that call for building a community was what started me streaming. And I realized, okay, like I mean, I don't want to become a professional streamer, but I think I can do something with this.
Yeah.
And Red Bull was always a company that I looked up to. I've been really interested in wakeboarding, and in high school I was really big into wakeboarding, and I really liked that Red Bull took these niche communities and continues to do it, and they kind of give them a platform and give them resources to grow without exploiting them. And so that was what drew me to Red Bull, but then I kind of had to connect the dots, like how do I get from being a bio major who streams on the side to Red Bull. And the other reason why I was really attracted to Red Bull was because they had an esports program.
I've actually been there in Santa Monica to their like their center there at the headquarters. Insane.
Yeah. It's so insane. And it was just, again, I think that was back in 2015.
It's probably about the same time I visited there.
Oh, no way. Well, maybe we walked past each other in the halls. But I was like, okay, I want to do something with Red Bull. I want to do something with esports. Like, Red Bull esports, perfect. It's already in Southern California. I don't have to leave. Like, my family's here. So, staying in California was a really big plus. And then one day I was walking to class and there was a flyer on the ground and Red Bull was hosting a Destiny Time Strikes tournament at USC, which, like, talk about fate, right? Like, what are the odds?
Yeah, your game, right?
Yeah, it's my game. Like, it's at my school. and it's on a day that I'm not cheering, so I can actually do this. And I go to the tournament. You're supposed to have a team of three. I went alone, or no, I went with one of my friends, so we needed one more. And we won the Time Strikes tournament for USC. And so they were like, hey, you are invited to come down to Red Bull's headquarters and compete in the finals. And so you can kind of see where this is going. Yeah. So I go to Red Bull's headquarters. I actually have a vlog of it on my YouTube channel, and I'm like elated. I could not believe, I mean, the facility is so impressive, and just being there physically and feeling like, okay, like, wow, I can actually, like, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say I was a bad teammate, but my goals definitely were not necessarily to win the tournament as much as they were to literally talk to anyone who would talk to me in the building. So, you know, I mean, they got it. They understood. I think the prize was like a bunch of Red Bull. So it wasn't like there was the most at stake, but I competed in the tournament and I ended up talking to a few people and really expressing like, hey, I love what you guys do here. I have a background in streaming, like, any way that I can talk to people in the esports department or shadow people, I would love to. And after taking probably five people out to coffee or lunch, they said they might have an internship spot. And so I spent a good amount of time there. The internship spot didn't end up opening up, but what did open up was a position to be part of their YouTube team, not like in front of the camera, but in terms of doing strategy and operations. So basically uploading the videos, making sure you have the files, doing the thumbnails and the titles and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're and just so lying this in was at kind this point, of, right? You were just like anything to get in.
Literally anything. Well, and at this point, it was never on my radar to be doing stuff in front of the camera as like a career.
Yeah.
It was something that I knew that I enjoyed, but it wasn't, that wasn't my goal. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was just kind of like, well, I like this thing and I like this thing and I like this company. Yeah, let's see how this goes. So I get that job with Red Bull Media House, which is like the side of the company that, as the name implies, focuses on their media. And I was really vocal about like, well, I want to be more involved in esports. I really want to, you know, help out that team. And so eventually I started doing strategy and being more hands-on with the esports YouTube channel. And actually, now that I'm talking, I realize that I am missing maybe not a crucial step, but I was just so proud of this. So before this job opening opened up, Red Bull and Destiny had a partnership. I don't know if you remember, but there were Red Bull cans with Destiny codes on them. And you'd like redeem the code and you'd get in-game rewards.
Yeah, I think I and vaguely so, remember that. I for some odd reason, I do remember that, you know, because Red Bull doesn't do a lot of those promotions. I mean, that's more reserved. You see that with Monster and Rockstar all the time, but Red Bull's very, very conservative mm-hmm. in what they allow, you know, co-branding and stuff like that. So I do remember this because I remember going, oh, Red Bull's stepping out of their box on this one.
Right. Well, so they stepped out of their box and it helped me because here I am as somebody who knows a lot about Destiny and they needed somebody to step into a consulting role because the woman who had been in the role just like left for another job. So I consulted with Red Bull on that Destiny partnership and then I moved into their YouTube team. And then it just kind of got to a point where I was like, well, I love analytics. I love understanding YouTube and building a community, but I want to be like more integrated into this, the gaming side of things and the gaming team. And, you know, I was kind of like an honorary member of the esports team, but just the way that the company is set up when you're doing YouTube programming, you're in a different part of the company. So BuzzFeed actually approached me at that point and they approached me about a different position. It was like a weekend YouTube strategist. So I would be doing kind of be on call for anything YouTube because there's a lot of things that happen to go wrong when you're doing weekend uploading and, you know, it's good to have a person there. And again, I was just really transparent with them that I was like, hey, this is my background. Like, I don't know if you guys do gaming content. I don't know if you're planning on doing more because at that point, I think they had like a handful of videos. And they were like, well, actually, we are about to open a spot for somebody to lead our gaming, like male-oriented content on YouTube here. And so I ended up getting that job. And the crux of my job was to understand what BuzzFeed's YouTube channel was. They had a YouTube channel called BuzzFeed Blue, and that was kind of my domain. And I had to understand that audience, understand the audience we wanted to get, which was in the gaming space, and come up with the type of content that we would have to make in order to acquire that audience and make maybe more endemic gaming content. So that was a really big task. And actually thinking about it now, how terrified I was in terms of like, what am I doing here? I have no idea what I want to do. I have no idea. Like, I just really like games. Was kind of crazy.
It is crazy. Well, I got to ask about, I mean, that's just like, because you were basically drawing a content plan for an entire company, right? I mean, as far, not for the entire company, but for this new, like, it was kind of just from scratch, right?
As far as YouTube goes, yeah. So they had experimented in the gaming space, but it was very much from a position of like, oh, like BuzzFeed does gaming. And, you know, knowing what we know about people who consume that kind of content on the internet, like, yeah, they weren't exactly excited that BuzzFeed was trying to make gaming content.
Yeah, it's got to be authentic. You know, gamers can see right through that. If it's not authentic, it's just like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's... Yeah.
Exactly.
So I do want to ask about BuzzFeed real quick before you continue on. Sorry to interrupt, but...
Yeah, please do. No, interrupt. Please, yeah. Ask all the questions.
No, like, because I saw this yesterday, and... I've been kind of like a gamer. I mean, which is weird because here I am, professional race car driver and radio host, and all I want to do is talk about gaming and pro wrestling, right? But you went to WWE and trained for a week. Like, I watched the video,
did.
And I was like, this is insane. How was that? Because it looked like you slayed it.
That, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up because I feel like I'm breezing through this. No, so that is one of my proudest moments because it was probably the most challenging thing I've ever done, both physically and mentally. So I'm going to rewind real fast and just give you a little context on me. Like, I'm super into fitness. I'm really into like being a fit, like an athlete, even past my age of like playing. I used to play volleyball, and with cheer at USC, that was something that like I had never done before. And I just kind of like threw my body into it and was like, well, if I can't figure it out, then I won't make a squad. And if I do, then that's great. And so WWE was kind of that same thing where I was like, well, these people are flipping off of things and jumping and attacking each other. And BuzzFeed, my director, came up to me and was like, hey, Sid, so, you know, we know that you are pretty in shape and like we're doing this video that would require you to, you know, be really comfortable pushing yourself athletically. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm kind of interested. I had never done a video for BuzzFeed at this point. And really, I had never done a video. I had done some light producing at Red Bull, but I had never really done anything with video beyond like pre-production and setting strategy, right? So more of like creative producing. And she was like, yeah, like you're going to get to be on set. Like you would be in the video. It's in Florida like in 2 weeks. This was my second week at BuzzFeed, and I was like, wait, so you guys are going to send me to Florida for a week to go do some, like, athletic thing? Okay. And they wouldn't tell me what it was. I think they were afraid that I would say no if I knew what it was. And so I was like, okay, yeah, like, I'll do it. And they're like, great. So you're going to sign with WWE for 7 days. And I was like, what? You're not serious, right? Like, that's crazy. And so... that's exactly what we did. Like, I can't even tell you how much, I cannot properly express how stressful that was in terms of just like your body feels like you've been hit by a car every day and you just keep doing it. And I remember turning, I can't remember who I was talking to, it was one of the NXT, what would you call that, superstars?
Yeah.
And she was like, I was like, do you ever get used to this? Like, does your body stop feeling this way? She was like, no, that this is just kind of my life now. And I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah, if you watch the video, you probably saw me just like, you jump and just hit the mat and those mats are not, they are not friendly at all.
No,
it's literally like wood and carpet.
Yeah, well, that's what everybody sees them, and they're like, oh, they're suspended. Like, it's not like landing on a, you know, concrete, but it's not much better. I mean, it's a hair better, but
it's not like it's a trampoline.
No, it's even like the ropes. People are like, oh, it's like bungee cords. I'm like, no, if you've actually ever hit them, they're not. You know, it gives
a
little
they're like cable.
Yeah.
And actually, my back, so I filmed that in, I think, July, and not this past July, but July, whatever year that was. And I think my back took until like March of the next year to finally stop hurting.
Wow.
It was brutal. And I mean, they were taking all the safety precautions. Like it wasn't because of anybody's fault. It was just purely how much your body is put through when you're doing that was crazy. But I'm so glad I did it. It's probably one of my favorite like life experiences.
Yeah. Well, and the funny part about it too is like, you know, and we talk about, you know, you're talking about being on, you know, on screen and things like that, and you didn't see it now, you know, with Daily Fix, you're, you know, they're constantly and things like that. But I look at it, and, you know, streaming you were too, but like there's a certain thing about wrestling is it's more storytelling. It's like a soap opera, and, you know, and so a big part of it's in ring work, but if you don't have the outer ring work, it doesn't work. And like, I watched the video and I'm like, man, you guys were killing it when you went through the curtain, you know, and you had your personalities and, you know, and like your character. And it's like a lot of people can't shed those inhibitions and just be like, I'm just going to go out here and just lay it on. You know what I mean? Because it's purely acting at that point. And a lot of people, like, they just can't shed that and walk through the curtain. And I watched you guys do it. And I'm like, wow, you guys got it. Like it was pretty amazing.
Thank you. I've never rewatched my first promo. I can't do it. I'm so embarrassed. So in the video, somewhere in the middle, we were watching a promo class for the NXT superstars, and they looked at us and they were like, why don't you guys go up? And the fear in my face was very genuine because we did not know that they were going to do that. So I was like, oh no, like I'm not an actor. What am I doing? And I can't rewatch it, but I'm very, very, very proud of my final performance. Yeah. Very proud.
Yeah, no, you guys nailed it. So here you are at BuzzFeed. I know what you're talking about, WWE and that. I mean, how did things shift? Because I think it was sometime earlier this year, right? I mean, you had kind of done some stuff with IGN. How did that whole door to IGN open? Because like, as far as I'm concerned, when you talk gaming media, I mean, IGN is just like, they're the definitive source. Like to me, that's, you know, they're the top level. Like if you're in this industry, that's where you want to work. You know, so I mean, how did that all happen? Because that had to have been an amazing call or email, you know, to kind of slowly be brought into the fold.
It was. But so it actually, there were quite a few steps between the two. So talking about the WWE video, like I said, that was my first video with BuzzFeed. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, part of the reason why going to BuzzFeed was so intriguing was from Red Bull, was because at Red Bull, there's a pretty strict mandate that if you're an employee of Red Bull, you won't appear on camera. Like that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And with my background in streaming, and again, not really knowing exactly what I wanted to do, I was like, well, I don't really like that door's closed. And at BuzzFeed, they're super open to, you know, when they do the casting calls for those videos, I'd say 95% of the time, the videos that you're watching are employees of BuzzFeed, because they just send out a big email to the company that's like, hey, this is what we're doing. Like, email back if you're interested. So the WWE video, I did that one. And then I just kind of started signing up for more videos. And eventually, as the gaming strategy started picking up, we realized that there weren't a whole lot of people at BuzzFeed who made videos and played games. So I started stepping into kind of a producer role and appearing in videos and building up a little bit of A, my confidence, and B, just like proving, oh, I can do this. And in the back burner that I haven't really mentioned is from, I can't remember my first convention, but I had always done whatever I needed to do in order to show up to as many video game conventions as possible. So whether that's E3, whether that's PAX, those were kind of the two that I focused on, because there's quite a few, you know, E3s in LA. I didn't have to find travel. I was an intern for GameSpot and Kind of Funny's E3 booth in 2015, I think.
Okay.
And that introduced me to, you know, Kinda Funny has a lot of ties to IGN. So that introduced me to those guys. And every convention, I would meet as many people as I could. And I say that a lot in when people ask for career advice, like meet as many people as you can. And I think what worked out for me was that I never met people with the intention of like, oh, you work at IGN, like help me get a job, right? It was just being genuinely interested in people and becoming friends with them and hearing their stories.
It's so funny and so you just, say that. Like, because,
oh, no, go ahead.
No, it's just so funny you say that because I literally, anybody that's listening to this or my other show, like, I've been the same way. Like, I've been on a 7-year journey to be this television host, but it wasn't like that was my end game. It was just like, I've told people, they're like, how do you get sponsorship? How do you get jobs? How do you do this? And I'm like, you go to as many trade shows as you can, as many events as you can. You shake hands, you introduce yourself, you say, hey, you buy somebody a drink, you buy them breakfast, but you don't do it with an agenda. You do it just because you genuinely like these people and you're meeting new people, but it like opens up doors and you may meet somebody and 3 years later you get a call. You know, it's not that it's planned,
totally.
You know, you don't pitch yourself. You just like, you just keep in contact, you network, right?
Totally. I mean, and that, like, I feel like it's so cliche to say, but I would not have my job if I did not network the way that I did, or be that committed to, I don't even like the word networking. I think it was just, like I said, even for Red Bull, it was, I took so many people to coffee, to lunch, like people were gracious enough to give me their time. And I wanted to learn from them. I mean, they're working at a company that I want to one day work for, or they're in an industry that I'm super interested about. Like, how did you get there? Tell me all about it. And, you know, people love talking about themselves. I love talking about myself, right? So people are so willing to, in most cases, like divulge and help you.
Just
because
be
I mean, I wouldn't be where I was or am without all of the help from other people. So, and a lot of people try to kind of pay that back.
Yeah.
So if you're interested, go to as many trade shows, conventions as possible. Do it. It will, at the very least, you will learn so much.
Yeah. Just be a sponge.
So I will
take
get off my
in.
High horse now.
Yeah. No, it's serious. You just go and you listen to people. Listen to what they have to say. Take it all in. They've all got experiences. You can learn something from everyone. And that's, like you said, like, I mean, it's funny because your career path is so much similar to mine where I was doing the same thing. It was just like, yeah, anytime I'm in a city, it's like, hey, do I know somebody at some company that I really don't know? Can I take them out to lunch? Can I buy them coffee? Like, I send emails like that still to this day. It's like, hey, you know, we met so-and-so like a year ago. Hey, let me buy you coffee. I'm in Seattle or something. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, yeah, no problem. Let's do it. But it's just randomness
like that.
And it's
scary.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sorry. I feel like every loud vehicle that could have driven by me in this moment has. So apologies if that's getting picked up on the mic.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it is scary to reach out to somebody and be like, hey, can I take you to coffee? And some people will say no, some people will say yes, but I think it's worth the risk.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is all going on as we're talking about, you're meeting people, you know, you're from BuzzFeed, like you said, but there's been like this whole window of time where you're meeting new people, things like that. How did things first open up with IGN?
Okay. So it actually starts, or from what I believe how IGN even knew of me and that I hosted, was it started at actually an E3 party in 2018 right now. 2017 was the Game Awards. So 2017, an E3 party at 2017, where Jeff Keighley was there. And Jeff, you know, Jeff is a really stand-up guy, and he does the Game Awards, which is in December. And the Game Awards is important for a lot of reasons, but it's also an award show that most people in the industry are watching, right? So I meet Jeff at the party, and I very embarrassingly met him because I wanted to meet Hideo Kojima. And he was friends with Hideo, and I didn't want to approach him. And so somebody who knew Jeff was like, oh, Jeff, meet Sydney, da-da-da-da-da. So Jeff and I meet. And then November rolls around. So the Game Awards is in December, and mid-November I get an email from somebody from the Game Awards, and they're like, hey, Sydney, we wanted to reach out about the potential of you helping out with the show. They didn't tell me what my role would be, and they just asked if I had any, had a reel or had anything that I had done. I didn't have a reel at that point, but I sent some BuzzFeed YouTube videos and was like, here's this. Didn't hear back for a little bit, and then they got back to me and they're like, hey, we would love to work with you. Like, we'd love for you to be like our backstage host for the Game Awards. So I was simultaneously completely terrified and super excited. I remember like being really excited, and then a couple days before the show, just like sobbing because I didn't think I could do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like my first real hosting gig is live in front of all these people that I look up to. Like, what am I doing? This is crazy. And so I did that show, and that was in December. And then I remember just loving it. Like, the show was on a Thursday, and then I had to go back to work with BuzzFeed on Friday. And I just remember this really intense contrast between the rush of what I did on Thursday and being part of this big production and being in front of the camera, and then coming in on Friday and like looking through YouTube analytics and checking like video stats and being like, whoa, I want to host. Like, that is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
So January, that December was when Naomi left IGN. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to backfill her. Like, I was talking to my boyfriend, now husband, but my boyfriend at the time, and I was like, Alex, what if I applied for Naomi's job? And we had a legitimate, like, good laugh about it. Like, ha 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 ha, that's so ridiculous and hilarious.
Yeah.
That'd be so funny if you applied, because you would never get it. Ha ha ha. Like, it was, we had a legitimate laugh about the probability of this happening. And so January, I just happened to actually know, this is how I found the job listing, was a friend of mine DM'd me on Twitter and was like, hey, I saw this job posting and I thought of you. Like, you should totally apply. And the URL wasn't like IGN.com/careers or whatever. The URL was very obscure. And so I kind of ignored it for a second because I was like, ah, I don't know. Like, I'm working at BuzzFeed. Like, I'm learning a lot. It's a company with a lot of weight to its name. Like, I don't know that I want to leave to go to whatever this random company is. So I didn't even click the link. And then I have no idea what compelled me to click it, but I clicked it and I was like, oh, whoa, this is a host and producer position at IGN in LA, because I wasn't super open to moving to San Francisco, mostly because at that point, like, my partner and I, you know, his job was in LA, and it just didn't seem like something that would make the most sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. My roots are here. Like, I didn't want to move to San Francisco. So there's this host and producer role in LA for IGN, and I cut together a reel as quickly as I could. I had no idea what I was doing. I spent like 48 hours without sleeping, just like cutting this reel and watching all these other reels and trying to make sure that mine seemed as professional or similar to it. And then I made a website and I applied. And right after I hit the submit button, I emailed or Twitter DM'd anyone that I knew who worked at IGN, who I had like a legitimate connection with, right?
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, I said hi to them once at a party. So it ended up being like two or three friends that I was like, hey, like, I applied to this job, kind of interested. Like, can you tell me more about it? And I'm going to step back on my career advice horse real fast and just say, if your end goal is that you want somebody to maybe think about recommending you for a job, don't email them asking for a recommendation. I have found the most success in asking legitimate questions that I have. And usually it will come up. They will either want to introduce you to somebody who would be really good to talk to about the role, or they'll say, hey, wow, you seem really passionate and you seem like a good fit. Like, I'd love to recommend you. So stepping off of my horse,
yeah.
I had my friend Sean Finnegan actually say, like, Sid, you would be great for this role. Like, I know the hiring manager, who is Fran. Like, I'm going to send all your stuff. Like, here's what you should send me, and I will make sure that he sees it. So that happens, and I didn't hear anything from IGN for probably, like, 3 weeks. It was an excruciating 3 weeks. And I get an email from Blair, who is the VP of Development and Branded. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's his title. And he's like, hey, we would love to use you for the shoot that we're doing. It's for the Lara Croft, like, Tomb Raider movie. and you are going to like train like her for a day, right. Which is something I was really comfortable doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, who doesn't want to do that, right?
Right? No, totally. But I was like, this is perfect. Like, Tomb Raider is one of the first games that I ever played. My dad had an original PlayStation.
I was going to say, so you're talking Tomb Raider 1 then. You're talking like way back Tomb Raider 1.
I think Tomb Raider 2 was my first one.
Which is, yeah. It was a little bit better
but
than
it's
Tomb
still,
Raider
you know,
1 anyways.
Back so. In the day, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, this is perfect. Like, I love Lara Croft. I love doing physical things. Like, I can do this. I feel very comfortable doing this. So we do the shoot. And again, I heard something probably a couple of days later. Like, I send the follow-up, like, hey, thanks so much for the opportunity, da-da-da-da-da. And they paid me, like, a freelancer. It wasn't like it was, they were like, hey, do this interview shoot, right? They were very ethical about it. And they asked me, they're like, hey, we saw you apply for this position. Like, we'd love to have you in for a test shoot. And just to, you know, meet some of the team. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is actually happening, isn't it? So I do the test shoot, and then at the test shoot, they were like, hey, you know esports, don't you? And I was like, yeah, that's kind of like my route. And they sent me to a collegiate Overwatch championship in Arizona. So I did that for them. And then after that, they asked me if I wanted to cover Overwatch League Stage 2's finals. So I keep getting all this freelance work from them, but I'm still at BuzzFeed at this point. And I'm thinking, like, well, does this mean that they like me and they want to hire me? But if they did hire me, why wouldn't they just hire me now? And eventually, come April, that was when I got the call. And they were like, hey, we'd love to bring you on. It was interesting, though, because so I started in April. And then Jackie Jing, who's the other host who's in L.A., started about a month later. And so Jackie's position was actually the position that I was interviewing for, but it was mostly entertainment oriented, and that's obviously, if you're this far in the podcast, you know that's not my background. And so they were like, well, here's the thing, so we hired somebody for that role that you applied for, but we really like you, we see your potential, you know, you obviously are a little green in the hosting arena, so like, we'd love to have you on, and you will be kind of the face of our social media. I was like, yeah, totally. Like, I'm game for that. And that never, I mean, I do a lot of stuff for our social, but that didn't necessarily materialize, and kind of just like the pieces fell into place and they found a way for me to be involved in a lot of the branded content. You know, I was doing all the stage shows. And so, yeah. And then Alana left, and I can't remember when she left. June, I think.
I was trying to think.
And then...
been a daily fix watcher for a long time. I'm trying to think. It was sometime over the summer, right?
Yeah, it was June or July. And then they kind of gave me the call. But it was funny because I was doing the daily fix on Snapchat. That started in August.
I was going to ask about that because you were doing like mm-hmm. like a daily fix spinoff like from LA, right?
Yeah. And it was, we covered, sometimes the stories would overlap, but it was just kind of made with Snapchat in mind and kind of a social audience in mind, and it was shot vertically. That today is my favorite. That's my favorite project that I do at IGN, like by a very large margin. I love the daily fix on Snapchat. It only runs if it runs in seasons, and the seasons are initiated by like branded campaigns.
Gotcha.
So it's not always running, but when it is my absolute favorite. And so me and then the producer, Nick Lamone, both work on the Daily Fix Snapchat and the Daily Fix proper. But so when Alana left in like June, they just kind of had people in San Francisco filling in because there were a lot of logistics with like, well, are we going to move it to LA? Are we going to keep it in San Francisco? Like, does LA have the bandwidth to like support a daily show? Because the team in LA is really, really small. There's a lot of salespeople. And then there's the entertainment team, and then there's the video team, which is like six people now, I think. So after those questions got answered, I started doing the Daily Fix in September.
Nice.
And here we are.
Well, and you know, it's funny about, you know, doing a daily show, and I do a couple of different audio shows, and I do a lot of TV, and like, there's something about doing a daily show, and you get into a routine, and like the thing that like radio and podcasting, it's a little bit easier because your face isn't there, but like when you're like you on mm-hmm. the Daily Fix, that's a really hard thing to do a daily show because, I mean, there's some days you wake up and you just know, hey, this isn't a good day, but you're doing a Daily Fix and you've got to be like happy. You got to be excitable. Like you've got to be able to walk in no matter how bad your day is, flip the switch mm-hmm. and just be like glowing. So, you know what I mean? And that's got to be tough.
So my secret is I watch a Vine compilation before we shoot every day. That always, but no matter what happened in the morning, if I watch a Vine compilation, I'm usually like, okay. Yeah. I'm good. We can do this.
We're set. Get
But yeah, I mean, I think it's been really helpful for me since, like, you know, I've really only been hosting since last December. I don't want to discount how much streaming and being in front of the camera every day, like, helped me to get to this point, but I've really only been formally hosting since December. And so having every day I'm in front of the camera and I'm reading off a prompter and I'm writing a script or co-writing a script, that makes such a big difference for just like your confidence level, for getting in that routine. And while it is difficult, like you said, some days, you know, I was super sick maybe 2 weeks ago and it was something where I was like, I wasn't sick enough that it was very clear that it's like, I can't do this. But it was something where, you know, you would probably go to work in sweats and with your hair up. And that wasn't really an option. So I don't know. I love having a daily show, and it's been really nice to have kind of like a micro community within IGN's community that I can connect with because they see me every day or 5 days a week.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, talking about that, I mean, we've got a ton of fan questions, like all kinds of stuff. But before we get to those, I do want to ask, how the heck did this signature Sydney pose with the foot up on the counter? How did this whole thing come to be? Because like that's become your calling card on social media and everything else. And like you start looking through and like people are like tagging you and stuff, like doing your signature pose. Like it's become this thing now. Like I'm just watching and it's like, it's hilarious almost.
So, okay. Let me first just say anyone who's ever taken a picture in that pose and sent me a picture of it, I have so much love for you. Thank you so much. Like, that just makes me so happy because, again, like what I set out when I started streaming, not even wanting to necessarily do this as a career, like was to build a community of like fun and positivity. And that to me really encompasses it because it's just so ridiculous. So despite what my social media might say, like I really didn't like social media before I started, you know, it's kind of integral to our job, right? Like to have a presence on there. And so I was trying to figure out something that was kind of not mindless, but, you know, I didn't have to think too hard. So I was like, okay, I'll take a picture of my outfit every day. Like, I really like clothes. I really like fashion. Take a picture of it. Easy. But then I realized that I couldn't always get my foot in the shot, and shoes are probably one of my favorite clothing items. And so I was like, well, what the heck? I, like, spent all this money on shoes. Like, the shoes make my outfit, and you can't even see it. Well, that's stupid. So I went into the bathroom and I was like, well, if I put my foot on the sink, then you can see my shoe. And that is how the sink selfie was created.
That's so funny.
So ridiculous. Because people are like, oh, you just really like taking mirror selfies. And I'm like, actually, this is in spite of me taking mirror selfies because I am showing off my shoe.
Yeah.
So the sink selfie.
Yeah, it's totally.
I'm so glad you asked about that.
Yeah, it's funny because like once in a while, I don't know if it's like your Instagram stories or something. Like you'll just like all of a sudden randomly, like there'll be like five reposts of like shoe selfies from people like pop up in it. I'm like, this has become a whole thing. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So we've got, I know we said plan on 45 minutes. We've got like a bunch of fan questions that have popped up here. Like, I don't know, we'll run through like four or five of them. The biggest one,
Perfect.
Though, yeah, the biggest one here, and this comes from a couple different people. So, and it's basically geared around esports. And I know like your esports is your background. I've actually, mm-hmm. I mean, it's got so big. Like, I've been asked, because I've got a motorsports show, I've got this show that we talk gaming and a bunch of other stuff. I've actually, it's big enough where I've had sponsors come in and say, hey, will you do an esports show that's even specifically kind of game, like, geared towards motorsports esports? Like, it's got so big, like, I've got sponsors coming at me saying, hey, we want you to host a podcast just on racing esports. And I'm like, wow, like, if that niche is so big that it can support financially something, like, esports, I think in the past just 5 years has just gone crazy. I mean, where do you see the future of esports? Because, I mean, every single year, Sydney, it's just like it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I love esports so much. I think that the really interesting thing about esports is that each kind of community and each game is its own esport. Like, I know that's a stupid sentence.
No, it makes sense.
But it's like, League of Legends esport is so different. Like, LCS is so different than watching, like, OWL, which is Overwatch's league, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to act like I'm an expert in the racing esport ecosystem. But I do think it's, like, it's so exciting. And people are starting, the general public is starting to really become more warm to the idea that it's, like, yes, this is watching people at the top level play these games at the top level and be real competitors, right? When I was at Red Bull, Red Bull has a high performance department. And what they do is they work with athletes, esports and, you know, more traditional athletes, action sport athletes, to help them optimize their performance. And I just remember we had, I think it was Optic Gaming, we had them in there when I was there, and they would do all sorts of things. Like, they had this, like, brain scan situation where they'd have to concentrate on the point and concentrate so hard that they could move the point. And those are kind of, like, the training things. And I just,
wow.
I'm getting so off topic from the original
question. No, it's totally good, though. Like, I'm interested. So, like, roll with
it. But it's just so exciting to see that it's becoming more acceptable in the mainstream. And, you know, like, OWL was streamed on ESPN and on ABC, and, like, that to me is so exciting, because it only means that there's more people who are like, whoa, this is a thing, this is something that I can devote my life to, and sponsors and brands are like, wow, we want to get involved in this. And where there's more money, you know, there's more opportunity to continue for it to grow and have bigger tournaments and bigger prize pools and more TV deals. And I find the whole thing so exciting, because, like I said, esports to me is just so fun and competitive, and the sky's the limit at this point.
Yeah. Well, and I agree. And I'm all about positivity online and in gaming and just in life. And, you know, I think there's a point like 15 years ago where there was a lot of kids, you know, 15, 20 years ago into gaming and things like that. And, you know, and they're going to school and it was like, ah, you're the nerd, you're a gamer. Like, you know, you were the geeky one. But now, like, they don't have to play football. They can play esports. And, like, I mean, there's a platform for it. I mean, you know, and like we said, with social media and streaming and, like, you know what I mean? And, you know, like you said, Major League Gaming and everything else that, you know, iRacing on the motorsports side, like, it's crazy that, you know what I mean? Like, these kids, like, to me, I think it's awesome because these kids now have an outlet of positivity, you know what I mean? And you can be a mm-hmm. celebrity in this niche, and, you know, and the people on the other side that used to make fun, now they're like, oh, well, how do I, like, I want to be a part of that too, you know? And so I think we've
totally.
Seen things come, like, full circle, and I think that's so healthy, though.
I mean, I completely agree. I think it's something where, you know, even if those stereotypes that are like, whoa, well, you're a nerd, I don't want anything to do with this, like, you're a loser, don't want to be involved, I think at the end of the day, it becomes this community. And I'm not saying that esports communities are always, you know, well, I guess the best way to phrase it is, there are esports communities that are toxic. Probably all of them have moments of toxicity, right? But for people who, they love games, and now there's something that legitimizes it, that they can do that's legit, that's like, hey, I want to take this to the next level. Like, I'm really, really good at this. My brother is ridiculously good at games. I mean, he's not going to go into esports just because, like, he doesn't want to. And I don't know that he could, but he's super good at games. And it's cool to think that he could have, you know, trained and really put in the energy, and that that would be a viable career option. I think that's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and the one thing, like, I always use is, you know, you and I both know FPS shooters and how good those people are. But I'm like, if you ever really want to get an appreciation for something you completely don't understand, you just know they're really good at it. You watch, like, professional StarCraft players. I'm like, it's just still to this day blows my mind. I'm like, you don't even need to know what's going on. You just need to know that they're good at what they're doing.
If your listeners just don't totally understand esports, which I get, like, I totally empathize with that, because if you've never been to an esports competition in person, it's hard to understand. So when League of Legends had Worlds and the finals were in LA, I actually took my parents, which is so funny because, you know, I was working in esports at the time, and they're like, what in the world do you do? I don't understand. Like, how is this your job? Like, well, let me take you to Worlds and I will show you. And it's like, there's fire, there's orchestras. They sold out. I want to say that the stat is that they sold out the Staples Center quicker than Adele did. Like, it was really special to share that with them.
That's crazy. Wow. So, we got a ton of these questions coming in. Like, next one. This one actually is pretty solid, and I do want to chime in on this, but it says, how is it being a female in the video game industry and working past negative comments where they assume you're not a true gamer? I think you're great, smart, and a true gamer. How can we get more female gamers in this industry? And for you answer, like, I've got to say, like, I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and she's, like, full-on gamer. Like, that's what she wants to do. And she plays volleyball and stuff like that. But, like, she's got this whole group. There's, like, this group of 10-year-old girls here in town. And, like, they literally have their own little, like, gamer girl group. And they play online together as, like, their own little, like, squad. And, like, it's, like, to me, it's, like, no boys allowed. Like, hey, we're in, like, they're really good. And I think it's hilarious. You know what I mean? I don't think it's hilarious, but I think it's great. You know what I mean? But they feel like,
yeah,
it's their thing, and they feel welcome there, and it's like, you know what I mean, like, we belong, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the top of that question, which is kind of like, how do I deal? First, thank you. I'm glad that you believe that I genuinely have an interest in this, but I'm not gonna lie, it's been really, really tough. I think that my working in games wasn't nearly as tough as being in, like, on camera talking about games. But even before I was doing front of camera work, my fair share of instances where I would be the person in the room, something, I'd give my opinion on, you know, or my suggestion on, like, where we should take things, and it's glossed over because I was the person that gave that suggestion. And it sucks. Like, there's no way around it. Like, it's just, it's not great. I think that as there's more women in games, it's kind of like an exponential compounding effect where, you know, young girls like your daughter see women working in games. They're like, wow, this is something I can do. But also, as there's more women in games, you're like, wow, this is something that I feel comfortable doing. Because it's tough to be the only woman in a boardroom, right?
Yeah.
And so it's exciting because I think within games, there's just a really awesome community of women who work in games and who keep in touch and who feel like they can talk to each other when there's issues and get advice on things. And there's just, like, such great mentorship. So there's, like, part one. Part two, I would say that, like, I never realized, this has been a huge growing experience for me, being front of camera and having people kind of critique literally everything I do. Oh, you wear crop tops, so you clearly don't know what you're talking about, which is something that has been said to me multiple times. And I have had to really look inside of me and really thought, like, well, why do I need this validation from people who, you know, they're like, they clearly have their own issues if they feel like they need to be this negative on the internet, right?
Yeah.
And it's not something that I'm great about. It's something that I have been really grateful for, kind of that personal growth to find the confidence in myself. That's like, well, I do love games and I don't really need to prove it. Like, I've proved it enough getting the jobs that I have and working at IGN, and I don't really need to put any stock in the fact that people online need to believe that I love games as much as I do, which is a hard thing. And I, some days I'm like, yeah, days, I'm like, hey, if I look at the comments, I might cry. So maybe we don't do that today, right? You kind of just build a tough skin, and I wish there was a better answer to it. But you, like I said, I try to lean on the fact that I'm really grateful that I'm having this personal growth, because I think that even if it's not people online, even if it's people like that you interact with at the coffee shop, like, I'm realizing that I don't need to put as much stock into, or any stock into, what people are thinking of me if I truly believe that I am who I am. And then the third part of the question was about how to get more women in gaming. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think, you know, I think we, you know, you've kind of touched on it, but it was more, you know, how do we cultivate, you know, more female gamers, you know what I mean, coming in and things like that. But I think, like you said, they see powerful females in this industry like yourself, you know what I mean? And they, you know, they see that and it's like, you know, I think it's a welcoming sign for them, you know?
Yeah. And I would encourage if there's any, like, if, I mean, honestly, if there's anybody who's interested in getting into gaming, period, regardless of like what gender you identify with, reach out to people who you look up to, because more often than not, they'd be happy to give you advice or give experiences that will hopefully help you. But I say, you know, persevere and try. It's so much easier said than done, but try not to let negative experiences, negative words affect the fact that, like, this is what you want to do and you can totally do it.
So looking at 2019, this is another question that we got. What are you looking forward to in 2019? What games, what kind of trends do you think we'll see in 2019? I mean, what's got you stoked on 2019, Sydney?
Well, off the bat, I'm pretty sure the Pokemon RPG for the Switch is supposed to come out.
Yes.
I'm very excited for that.
I'm there with you.
I like Pokemon Let's Go, but I am ready for the like mainline Pokemon RPG on Switch, because I love my Switch. And then I would say hopefully I'm looking forward to a Persona 5 announcement coming to Switch.
Oh, you and me
again,
both.
I love my Switch.
Yet. I haven't played it yet. I didn't buy it. Yeah, I don't have a PS4. I've got a mm-hmm. Switch and an Xbox. And so I was like, do I buy a PS4 strictly to get Persona? Because I absolutely loved, you know, the previous ones. I played 3 and 4. But I was like, then I saw it possibly coming to Switch. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to hold off.
Right. Well, my thing is, so if I'm home and I'm with, like, a console like PlayStation or my Xbox, I'm probably playing something like a online shooter. That's just like how I connect with friends, and that's how I blow up steam, and that's what I enjoy doing. And so I pretty much only play RPGs if I'm on the road. And so Persona coming to Switch would be very convenient for my playing habits. And then Anthem is the other one that I'm really excited about. As like a Destiny player, I'm excited to see, well, I guess I'm not excited to see Destiny without, or like Iron Man Destiny, I think is what some people are calling it. But I got to play some of it at E3 and it feels good. It's super intuitive. It was really cooperative and I don't know, I'm excited for it. I haven't been super excited about a franchise, like a new IP in a while. So hopefully it lives up to the expectation.
Yeah, you think we're going to see, what do you think, and this is a hard prediction because everybody says what's going to be the next such and such, you know, but I look at, you know, literally the last year or two, the game that's taken the industry by storm was Fortnite, right? Nobody saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody saw that coming, and now it's literally, I mean, you go to, like, anywhere, and it's there, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's like, what do you see could be the next Fortnite? But you can't even say that at this point, but it's like, because you can't predict things like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that, like, Battle Royale is such an interesting case study because it reminds me of kind of when Capture the Flag came into, like, the multiplayer market.
Yeah.
And there was this game mode that was like, whoa, it's cooperative. You're doing this thing. Amazing. I love it. And all these games adopted it. Like, I played it. It played CTF in Halo, like, probably thousands of times. And so I don't know that it necessarily has to be a full like new IP, but I think that Battle Royale, you know, it started as a game mode, and so I don't know, maybe we see a new innovative game mode that turns into something big enough that it can support its own IP similar to what Fortnite did.
Yeah, I think
but I'm hoping E3 we hear more about Halo Infinite. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, you're a massive Halo fan. I wish we could count up the Halo plugs you slid into the show, because I guarantee you we're numbered up there. No, I love Halo too, so I'm just giving you a hard time at this point. So that being said, what are you playing right now? Holidays coming up. I know this is going to drop right before the holidays. I got to ask you, I will tell you, I've got a brand new copy of Smash Brothers still sealed that I have not opened yet, strictly because I've been saving it for the holidays. But what are you playing over the holidays?
Well, first, I'm excited for you because Smash is great. I am probably going to keep playing a lot of Call of Duty. That's what I've been playing, but I've been playing mostly multiplayer. But last week I started playing Blackout a little bit more because I had a full squad, and it is so fun. I'm a very skeptical Battle Royale fan because I'm kind of trash at it. I'm very much a big fan of like close quarter shooters. So being on such a big map makes me extremely uncomfortable, and I have no idea like strategically how to move about it. So I'll probably try to get better at Blackout, and I'm playing through Kingdom Hearts right now. I've never played them before because after my dad's PlayStation, I never had a PlayStation. We were an Xbox family. So I missed out on all those, but I'm really excited about Kingdom Hearts 3. I'm a huge Disney fan. So I will probably try my best to power through Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and 2.5. I started 1.5 last week, and I've sunk some out, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of late nights if I want to finish before Kingdom Hearts 3 drops in January.
Yeah, see, and that's one thing. I'm actually a big – actually, I was when I was younger, I was never much of an RPG player. I'll be honest with you. But as I've got older and I travel now a lot with TV and things like that. So, like, RPGs, like you said, it's been one of those things I can take on the road with me because you don't necessarily have to be online and things like that. So I've really started sinking into RPGs that I can clock, you know, 80 to 100 hours in, you know what I mean, and just kill time in flights and travel. But Kingdom Hearts is the one series I've never touched. And it's not that I haven't wanted to, but for one reason or another, it's just I've never picked up a copy. So I'm kind of anxious to see, you know, how you're liking the series, just because that's something.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I love the fan base is so passionate. We got to do a video at E3 where I took people who were turned away from the demo line, and we got to take them to the front of the line to play the game for the first time. And just like hanging out with that fan base, they're so passionate and so excited that like I want to be a part of that. And honestly, the story of Kingdom Hearts is just bonkers. Like, what is happening? There's Sora, and then you have like Goofy and Donald Jr. Like, what is happening? Like, how did this happen? How are you allowed to do this? Like, what is happening? So I'm excited to get more into kind of the bonkers nature of the game.
Bonkers is good in gaming generally. So, well, I appreciate the time, Sydney. I know we're a little over an hour now, but I mean, I feel like, you know, like I've got a million questions. I'm sure this could be like a 2.5 hour podcast at some point. So it's like, I don't know. We'll see how the first one goes. Maybe we'll have to earmark this down the road for a second version.
Yeah, I'd love to have a part two if the people want it. It was so fun talking to you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you for having
Sydney.
Me.
Yeah, thank you. Big thanks to Sydney Goodman for doing this interview back in the day. Definitely worth the follow on social media. She's off to bigger and better things, and just a good friend of mine and a great guest to have on the show. You want to give me a follow? It's at JimBeaver15 on social media. Please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show. And with that, I guess I want to remind you once again, our good friends at Geico want you to check them out. Yeah, if you own or rent your home, well, I know you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's not? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And now Meguiar's has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone. For incredible water-beating protection and durability beyond traditional waxes, it's ceramic made easy. It's Meguiar's. And with that, we're signing off from Project Action on Podcast One this week. We'll see you next time right here on the show.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink. We play games. We have the song of the week. We have the creative curse word of the week. As long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!